My name is Chuck Childs, and I was in the Air Force for 22 years. It all started back. I was going to college, and I needed some extra money. I was playing dance bands and sweeping floors. So I joined the National Guard to get $2 a week, which really helped. Well, in November 1941, they started having us on maneuvers. February 1941, they federalized us, and they marched 12 of us college boys off the campus, sent us to Camp Claiborne, Louisiana, where we were in the 164th Infantry, and I was in the 34th Division. I was a light machine gunner, but then I was a musician, so I joined a band, and I played drums in the 164th Infantry Band. But while I was on maneuvers, I saw these airplanes flying over. And I went into Alexander, Louisiana, and saw these cocky, good-looking pilots walking around. And I was quite envious of them. Next thing, come on the bulletin board, was a notice that they wanted cadets. So I signed up for it. And there were six of us that signed up for this program. Three of the six made it. We had to take a physical, had to take a written exam, unless you had 2 years of college, and I had 2 years of college. If I had taken an exam, I'd never made it. But anyhow, I did make it, and then they sent me to cadets, and I got my wings on July 3rd, 1942. I never became a bachelor officer, because the next day, I married my college sweetheart, and we've been married for 66 years. So the first thing they did, they sent me to instructing. No, before that, I want to tell you, while I was taking combat missions, I was flying the P-40s and the P-51s, and I was doing gunnery practice down at Eglin Air Force Base, and I saw this big runway, and I saw these B-25s taken and staggering off the ground. And I couldn't figure out what they were doing. And it was Doolittle, and he was practicing for his takeoff off a ship. So I got to see that. Anyhow, my first duty was I had to instruct British cadets. And while I was instructing British cadets, there was in Montgomery, Alabama, the Tuskegee Airmen were flying out of Tuskegee. And there was a big green grass meadow that we used to land in to solar our boys. And I'd sit under a tree and talk to a British, black instructor while his blacks flew, while my British flew. Well, then I stayed in the training command, and they sent me down to Florida, and I was instructing gunners, and I started flying B-17s and B-24s. I flew everything else they had on the base. And I got tired of being in training command, and I kept trying to get out. And one day they come out that they needed B-24 pilots to go to the South Pacific. And so my hand went up. 2 o'clock in the morning, I had a picture taken with my wife and our new baby. 6 o'clock in the morning, they put us on a commercial airline. This was a special mission. Flew us out to California. And when we got there, they said, "What are you guys doing here?" They never received the orders. We sat for 2 weeks. Since I was a B-17 pilot, they sent me to Lincoln, Nebraska, gave me a crew. And I picked up this crew, trained with them, and then they sent us to Langley Field, Virginia, for lead crew pilots, and that's radar and navigators. What they were doing is they decided they better bomb in weather. And the only way they could do that was use radar. So I went there, and they took my bombardier away from me and took my navigator away from me and gave me a brand new radar navigator. So we trained, and we're getting ready to leave. And once again, a bomb fell on my head. The colonel called me in and says, "We need you here to instruct lead pilots." I says, "I was on my way to combat." He says, "Well, you're more important here." So I sat there for a week. I was called into commander's office, and he says, "Your boys must think highly of you." The whole crew went in to see the commander, and he gave me back my crew. So we took off, and he gave us a brand new airplane, and we named it Gravel Gertie. My wife never thought much of that, but that's what we named our airplane. We flew up to Grander Field in the Newfoundland, and we were weathered in for about 3 days there, so we had a chance to really work our airplane over. Then the orders came out, and we were to take off about 2:50 in the morning. I went in for my weather briefing, and here is a lieutenant that I went to college with, and standing next to him is another guy that I went to college with, and they both knew me. And so the one boy came out to the airplane to see us off. Prior, before we took off, a B-24 took off and didn't make it. He blew up on takeoff, which didn't set with the boys too much. So we headed out, and our first landing was Azore Islands in the middle of the ocean, just a pinpoint. And my radio operator and my new navigator just did a great job. When I landed there, I thought I'd forget to put my wheels down because I never heard so much noise in my life. And it's the first time I ever landed on a mat runway, and it was noisy. The next day we left there and we headed for North Africa, Marrakech. I have a little story to tell there. We were young, and the co-pilot, the navigator, and I decided just to walk into Marrakech. So we headed across the desert. MPs come and picked us up and brought us back. And some whippersnapper there standing as a lieutenant is telling us he's going to court-martial us. Of course, we were pretty important guys then. We were combat crews. And we thought that wouldn't happen. That night, the co-pilot and I snuck out again and headed across the desert looking for the lights of Marrakech, and it was dark out. Why we were doing that, I don't know. All of a sudden, I heard this noise, and we were surrounded by a bunch of Moroccans, desert rats, they call them, had guns, knives. I think they might have thought that we were an Italian prisoner of war trying to escape. So I said to Mike, my co-pilot, I said, "You have any cigarettes? Because I don't smoke." And he said, "Yeah." And I handed them out, Americano, Americano. So they pointed to the base, and we walked back to the base. And the MP said, "What are you doing out there?" "Well, we got lost. We were out there. We got lost in the desert." The next morning, boy, we were happy to leave. And we headed for Tunisia. And then after that, we went to Gioia, Italy. And from there, we went to our base in Foggia, Italy. And there's where my combat flying starts. Now, as a new crew, our first mission was to Vienna. And Vienna had over 1,000 flak guns around it, a lot of fighters. But I was kind of excited, and so I was watching the flak and all this stuff. And then they called up from the waist gun, and it says one of the waist gunners was hit, so I went back and kind of took care of him a little bit and got back. Then the next 4 days we went to school, and then for 3 days in a row we flew, and we had some tough missions. The next, we flew to Blackhammer, Vienna, Maribom, and Maribo. And these missions were tough. So when I got back from those missions, the squadron commander says, "You've got an awful lot of flying time. We're going to start you flying squadron lead." I'd only flown 4 missions, so I started flying squadron lead. And my first lead was to Maribor, Yugoslavia. They said we're supposed to go in at 19,000 feet because it was a milk run. And I led those boys into hell, I'll tell you that. That's the first time I ever saw flames instead of smoke when that flak was hitting so bad. And you could just hear the ripping through the airplane, just crunch. And it blew out my instrument panel, knocked out number 3 engine. And the darn thing was windmilling and I couldn't feather it. But they had a procedure over there when those windmills windmill with windmill, you'd have to get that prop off. You didn't want it to fly off and go through the airplane. So I moved the bombardier out of the nose and the navigator. And I went up into a pitch and I put the flaps down and pulled the throttles back, which kind of like a brake, and that prop went flying off somewhere in Yugoslavia. Well, we got back and our ground crew, which is always there waiting for us, they had over 200 holes in that aircraft. And the next morning, they gave me a piece of flak. They said, "This was headed for your head. There's a bar on the instrument panel right in front of me, and it caught behind that, and there it stuck. So I wouldn't be here telling this story if that had continued. That was really some mission. Then after that mission, we went to, and the winter months were terrible in Germany. And it got to the point that we could not take off. So that's why this radar bombing came in. And we were the first ones to fly radar bombing missions, the 15th Air Force 2nd Bomb Group. So they called me in, and they had one pilot from each squadron and called us in and says, you're going to take off and you're going to fly a lone wolf mission. So we would be briefed for this. We'd take off about 5 minutes apart, each had our own heading, and headed for a mission, which was Bleckenheimer. Well, it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. We're droning up there and getting up to altitude and in weather, flying instruments. And all of a sudden the radar man says, our radar's out. So I'm up over enemy territory, flying along, and I turned it around and come back on instruments and dropped their bombs in the Adriatic Sea because we couldn't land with them. I just got to bed, and I was just sound asleep, and somebody was shaking me, and it was a squadron commander. He said, you coward, you. I said, that's not a coward. I said, the radar went out. Oh, that's a lot of baloney. I said, go ahead and check it. He did. He never apologized, but he did. So I said, give me the next mission. So the next mission, we went up again. And this time we took off about 6 o'clock in the morning, weather all the way. Lost an engine due to ice. Finally got up to the bomb and down the bomb run. And we broke out in the clear. And the flak started coming up. And I'm only on 3 engines now, so I'm... We dropped their bombs, and I headed for the clouds because then the fighters came up. And they chased me, and I was in and out of clouds until I finally lost them. And I came back and landed, and I got the Distinguished Flying Cross for that mission. 5 days later, Colonel Collins was flying lead, and I was flying deputy lead on his right wing, back to Bleckenheimer. And first run, shot out an engine. So I put the power on to keep up. He did another run to that target, the second run. The next engine got shot out. So I'm sitting up there with only 2 engines. Now, there goes the formation flying off, and I'm hanging behind. And at that time, when the fighters knew that you were alone up there, they'd come pick you off. So I told the boys to keep your eyes open for fighters, and I started hitting in the clouds again and flying and flying. But we did not see any fighters. I had a different navigator, and we were really pushing to get home, and he gave me a heading. And I looked at that heading, and it was headed for Switzerland. And if we'd gone to Switzerland, we would have been interned, and I didn't want to stay in Switzerland the rest of the war. So I said to the boys, I said, what do you want to do? He says, let's go home. If we have to bail out, at least we'd be over the Alps, and we should be safe. So I says, we're not going to make it, guys. I said, start throwing things out. Out went the machine guns, belts, anything that we couldn't use, we tossed out. And we flew between the Alps, not above the Alps. And I told the engineer, I says, transfer the fuel of those dead engines because we're going to need it on the good engines. So I set up my run. I was coming in for a landing, and the third engine went dead. So I'm on 3 dead engines and 1 good engine, but I'm all set up for landing, so that was okay. So I landed, and I can always say that I brought her home on 1 engine, which isn't exactly true, but it's a good story. The tower was really surprised to see us because they just had heard we had been shot down. So I got a second Distinguished Flying Cross for that mission, and that was really made me feel pretty good. Now, February 28th, this is only couple days ago. It's always a bad day for me, because on February 28th, 1945, I lost an engineer. I had a co-pilot wounded and a radio operator wounded, and it was a tough day that day. But what we were doing that time was we were flying into northern Italy called the Po Valley, where the Germans were still at, and the British and the Fifth Army of America and the Eighth Army of the British were trying to drive them out. And we were trying to knock out some bridges so they couldn't cross and get out of Italy. So we went in to hit this bridge in Verona, Perona, and the flak was terrible. And at that time, we had a new commander, wing commander, and his name was John Ryan. Colonel John Ryan. He became the general of the Air Force. And he had called me in one day and he says, "Your crew's got a good record." And he says, "I want to use your crew as my crew." And I said, "What am I supposed to do?" "Well, you can use them when I'm not using them." So he used my crew. When he flew lead, I flew on his wing three times. I had to take over once. And then when I flew group lead, which was 18 times I flew the group lead, and he took my crew, and then I took another crew, and we flew over that mission. And he was leading the first bomb group, and I was leading the second. And he got hit. He lost two fingers, lost my engineer. He lost a bombardier, a wounded navigator, my wounded co-pilot, and my wounded radio operator. And they went down. At that time, I got a piece of flak, I mean a shell went right up through my wing, and it a hole about a foot in diameter. And had that exploded, I wouldn't be here either, but that's what happened that day. It was awfully tough for me to accept the death of Don. He was such a nice young kid, 19 years old from Chicago. He had a brand new wife. And before we went overseas, we visited. And after the war, I went to Chicago and visited with the parents, and that was a tough night. And my radar navigator, who made it, lived in Chicago, and he came over to the house, and he met Don's wife, Marge. A year later, he married her. So that was a nice ending. But that was a tough, tough mission, and I had to fly up to where they crashed landed, and they buried Don in a beautiful, on top of a hill, a beautiful little cemetery overlooking the Adriatic Sea. Later on, the parents dug him up and took him to Arlington, and where he's just another tombstone to all those boys. He should have stayed there. That was beautiful. But that was a tough mission. But we had a lot of tough missions. I'd like to mention some. Brux, Germany, December 19th. Brux, Germany was way up there by Berlin. Remember, we were flying from Italy. That I forgot to mention that mission when I came back on two engines. It took me 10 hours, so that's a lot of flying. Anyhow, we got hit that day by 48 fighters. I mean, excuse me, we got hit by many fighters, but 48 of the fighters were shot down, 26 by the bombers, and 22 by our fighters. We lost 21 bombers that day, and we lost 8 fighters. Then there's a special flight that I flew to Ruhlen, which is 60 miles south of Berlin, and I led the 2nd Bomb Group. The 2nd Bomb Group led the 15th Air Force, so I was the first airplane over the target. And I can all say that I led the whole 15th Air Force that day. And the flak was heavy, and we were hit by fighters, and we lost several of those. Then they call it the last battle to end the war, and that was the 5th and British 5th Army and the 8th Army of the British fighting the Germans. We were trying to knock out bridges. There was a bridge there in a little Italian village called Bresanova. I knocked that bridge out. Several years later, my son was stationed in Germany, and we went over to visit him, and I said, "Let's go down to Italy. Let's go to Bresanova. I want to see that bridge is still there." That bridge was still out. Needless to say, I didn't tell the Italians that I knocked that bridge out. I just never did. And so to finish this up, I have some stats here that I think I better go over with you. First, toward the end of the war, the Germans were fighting for their life. And they were sending up flak. They could send up those 150s to 30,000 feet accurately. They had, around Vienna, they had 1,000 flak guns. So we saw a lot of flak, and we saw fighters. And they'd send up a lot of fighters. And it states in the Air Force states that Bleckhammer, Brux, Munich, and Vienna were some of the toughest missions that we could fly. I flew 37 recorded missions, and 13 were not recorded because of the turnarounds, because of bad weather, maintenance problem, engine going out. But I was over Germany and enemy territory, Czechoslovakia, Yugoslavia. I was over there 50 times over enemy territory. There were 4,750 B-17s shot down during the war. And that's 40% of the number that was built. There were 4,288 bomber crews that were killed. 18,804 were wounded. 321,436 were taken prisoner of war. 18,699 missing in action, and most of them are presumed dead. So that's the record of what the B-17s did in the World War II. And I can say I was one of the lucky ones to come back. And I came back, I was tired, but I was whole. And I always thanked the man upstairs, because I'm sure that he was looking after me.